are up to the Mishnah on Daf Ayin Dalet Amid Beis. And the Mishnah here begins the laws of Hechsher Kelim. Typically, when we study Hechsher Kelim, and we teach it to Smicha students, so we actually start from the Mishnah on Ayin Vav Amid Beis, because this particular sugya, the next, the blot and a quarter, really only relates to winemaking. In other words, how many of you have a wine press in your apartment? So the principles that theoretically could apply, but because yayin is cold and has special dinim in this context, we typically don't encounter. The only place we encounter the dinim, it's not so much of wine, but people, and I think this is less so today, most people I know now, when it comes to Pesach, so Svardim hold that glass is not bole at all. You can use the same glass for everything. Ashkenazim, at the very least, it's not an explicit contradiction, but there's a possible contradiction in the Ramah whether glass requires Hechsher or it doesn't require Hechsher. And there are different resolutions to the Ramah. The practice that many of us have, some Achronim say, is that you distinguish between Pesach and year-round. Year-round, we assume that glass is not actually Boleah. So Ashkenazim, I would never tell anybody, use the same Karel dishes for meat and fleishiks, but the Evet, a dish that got the wrong thing on it, is not Aser, because it's glass. But for Pesach, we're Machmir, because of the Chumrah Chametz, that we don't use stuff that, you know, we don't use glass that was used year-round. But drinking glasses, because it's used cold, people will use, but the way they machshir it, I'm sure some of the people, some of the older people here, that's not us. But you did it, okay, that's fine. I didn't mean to say, it was challenging, you know, we're middle-aged and older here, so you and I are middle-aged. Everybody's middle-aged here. So, doing Miriv Ilu Gimel Yamim, that you fill it up with water, you leave it for 24 hours, then you empty it out, you refill it, you do that three times. We learned about that a while back in the second parak. That's the way you machshir kli cheres. Normally, you can't kasher earthenware, but when it only had cold stuff stored in it, in this case wine, that's how you can be machshir kli cheres. So that's the only case I think we encounter this. Otherwise, generally, when we deal with Hechsher Kelim, we're dealing with using fire, we're dealing with what requires fire, what requires boiling water, etc. So this sugya is not really going to speak to us that much, but this is the first part of Hechsher Kelim. So the Mishnah says the following. Gas shel even shezafasa. If you have a vat, so the vat is in the place in which you normally press the grapes. The gas is where you... there have really been at least two kinds of vats. There's the vat where you press the grapes by stomping on it, and then the wine flows down into some type of a bar or a pit. And then there was the gas where you actually used kelim. You used various kinds of presses to actually press the grapes. So the Mishnah here says that a gas shel even, you have a stone, a vessel that where the grapes are placed and they're pressed one way or another, shezefasa. You put you line it with pitch. And the concern is that the pitch itself will absorb from the wine. And apparently, when you would actually put the pitch in to do it, you would add a little bit of wine to dissipate some of the bitterness of the zephes of the pitch.
What's the purpose of the pitch? Is it to seal cracks?
I assume it's a sealant.
So that it doesn't get absorbed by the stones, or both?
I think the answer is to keep all the wine, make sure none of the wine gets lost into the stone. So the Mishnah says that if the Ove Kochavan was the one who did this, Minagva Vihi Tahora. So you're doing what's called Nigov. The Gemara will explain what Nigov is. Rashi already tells you here. Nigov means you use both Afer and Mayim. And Afer... I've never tried it as an experiment, but ashes were used as a kind of soap. And you find this in a number of contexts, I guess a scouring agent. So you would use afer and mayim, some combination or sequence of the two, and that's how you would clean off the pitch, and that would get out any of the concern of yayin. Vishel eitz, but what if it's wood? And the assumption somehow is that the wood is more porous, although it's really that the pitch is the concern right now. So, Vishal 8, Rebbe Omer Yenage. Rebbe says it's sufficient to do Nigov, whereas Vachachamim Omrim Yiklof Es Hazefes. You actually have to peel away. You have to peel away the pitch and start over. In other words, that's all awesome. Now, so I can't say I fully understand why this is so. in the sense that the Zephes presumably absorbs what it absorbs. It doesn't make a difference what the material underneath the Zephes is. Right? If you told me that stone and wood, and we're about to say cheres, absorb different amounts and either can or can't be kasher but require different kinds of kasher, I understand. But here apparently the underlying material influences how much the Zephes absorbs. Yes, Sam?
Well, after you take off the Zephyrs, what do you have to do with the Eitz?
The Mishnah...
Maybe you do have to do something with the Eitz. Maybe it's in order to get to the Eitz, too. Because we don't need to get to the stone, but we need to get to the Eitz, so that's why we remove the Zephyrs.
Okay, so I'll tell you, it doesn't sound like that, but maybe that's why. There are things that make me wonder whether that's true. The Mishnah certainly doesn't tell you anything else. And when we see in the Gemara, it doesn't sound like, in the Mishnah's case, you need to do anything other than remove the pitch. But, okay... and then finally, vishel cheres. If it's earthenware underneath, afal pisha kalaf es azefes, even though you peel away all the pitch, the gas is still asura. It's still, we assume that the cheres in this case absorbs, and asura doesn't mean totally asura. There may be ways of kashering it. We'll see that in a moment, or we'll see that in the Gemara eventually. But at least as it stands, and this is why I think, Sam, it doesn't work the other way. The Evan and the Eitz, once you do what you do, are perfectly fine. By the Cheres, even though you've peeled it off, still there's a problem with the underlying Cheres. Now, when the Mishnah says Osir, it doesn't mean that there's no way of fixing it, but it does, because we have ways of fixing Klei Cheres. We have Milui V'iri Gimel Yamim, the 72-hour process. But, as it stands right now, without doing anything further, it's Osir. Marshall?
So, I mean, they're basically making a chemistry assumption Cheres is by far the most absorbent and sort of pitch seals it into the cheres itself. But wood, I mean, is this where we get back to scotch barrels again? If there's the reason wood is not deemed to absorb enough to become in need of additional kashering once the pitch is peeled off? Because if you would put non-kosher wine directly in the wooden barrel, you'd have a much more complicated situation. So why is this not analogous?
So there are a couple things. The assumption I think being made here, which I suspect may be true, is that unglazed pottery, you know, real clay cheres, absorb more than wood do. Now, when we spoke about the Scotch question, so I think that the issue, the assumption is that the wood absorbs there also. The reason why that was mutter is because the amount of because of a very strange halacha that water and wine and water is batel b'shisha. Right? That's the only reason why it would be fine. In fact, when you look at I think on the CRC website, somebody wrote an article about this, trying to calculate, they're trying to figure out how thick the barrels are and whether it's six, but it's much easier. We generally assume, and the Rishonim say this, and I think it's true, you can do the calculus, it's very hard to find a vessel that you have shishim in the volume of the stuff inside, liquid, whatever else is contained, you know, connected to the walls of the pot. Now, maybe our pots are a little thinner, and they talk about it, if you have a very thin pot, it might work. But it may be hard to get shishim. It's not. I don't think it's so hard to get shisha. But the question is, how thick are the wood barrels and so on? But that's why the possibility. It's not that the wooden barrels don't absorb. It's that whatever they absorb might very well be batel b'shisha. So in those cases, they happen to use wood barrels. If they use cheres, the halacha, if the volume calculations worked out to be the same, it wouldn't be a problem if they had used cheres barrels either.
The wood here was very small, then you might not be able to clear those
dimensions. No, except for that, remember that the wine didn't sit directly on the wood. It had a coating, had some type of a sealant, that would have kept it, if not totally out, you know, mostly out. And so if the wood is not so porous, and very little is getting through, then we're not worried, you're not going to have a problem. Yeah. I suppose this would be easier to handle if we actually did this today. We'd have a little bit of an understanding. Okay. So with regards to cheres, the Mishnah said even though you peel away the pitch, still the gas is asura, and you can't do anything until you somehow kasher the gas. I'll point out Rashi already here highlights the question. Or highlights an observation. If you look at the last Rashi on the Mishnah, Rashi writes about this line, v'shel cheres, kosalka daitach divrei hakolhu. Divrei hakolhi. So that's a funny line in Rashi. You would think The assumption is right now that this everybody agrees to. Now, Rashi only writes that because he's foreshadowing what's going to come in the Gemara. When you read the Mishnah itself, so we know that when it comes to wood, there's the Machlokes Rebbe and the Chachamim. When you get to the last line, the Shechacham Om Yiklof Esazefes, then the Shelcheres, such and such as the din, is that a continuation of the words of the Chachamim, or is that a new line? In other words, we have three parts to the Mishnah. We have first Evan, then we have Eitz, then we have Cheres, and the last part is a standalone part, and the fact that there are no opinions cited means everybody agrees. And it's just as everybody agrees by Evan that it's not a problem, you don't even have to strip away the pitch, so too everybody agrees by Cheres that even strip away the pitch is not sufficient, and the debate is by eight. So Rashi's telling you that's what we're assuming right now. The Gemara is going to turn around and say no. The Gemara is going to turn around and say that last line is part of the continuation of what the Chachamim say, but it will turn out that Rebbe believes that if cheres has the same din as eitz, that earthenware has the same din as wood, and that if you put pitch in, now if you scrape away, the pitch, it will be just fine. Okay, scrape away the pitch, it will be fine. Let me correct that. You have to menagev. If you do nigov, if you just like Rebbe says, nigov should work on the eitz. So I think it's nigov will work on the cheres as well. Okay, so now the Gemara starts with the following. Amar Rava, Dafka Zafasa. The din of the Mishnah only applies if you put pitch on the stone. Aval Darach Ba Lo. If you didn't, this is many Rishonim don't have this line in the Gemara. We're going to have two versions here of Rava that don't argue on one another. They're addressing two different cases. Rashi has the Girsa that we have in front of us. Other Rishonim say there is no such girsa, and just go to the part where you have the Ika de Amre, the second version of Rava. That's the only thing the Gemara ever said. But the way it reads in front of us right now, so Rava says that it's only if you put pitch on the stone that it's the pitch that's going to absorb some wine. But if you actually, and right now when we talk about having to scour the Zephes, you didn't actually, we're not talking about anybody who actually stomped on grapes and made wine in this. All we're concerned about is the wine that was mixed in with the pitch when they actually coated it. So the Gemara says its own, Rava says it's only if there was a pitch here, but if darachba in a, I'll call it a naked gas, a gas that's not coated, then it's not a problem. He says all you have to do you don't have to do anything. Rashi says, madicha, you just have to rinse it out and it's not a problem. The assumption is that the stone is not sufficiently porous to absorb cold wine in any meaningful amount that we have to be concerned about it. Okay, so the Gemara says, Pshita zefasatran. Why would you think otherwise? That's what the Mishnah says. I mean, it doesn't address this case, but the Gemara says, Mau detema hu adin afilu darachba. You would have thought the din was the same, that if you didn't coat it and you just stomped on the grapes in there, that you'd have to scour the stone just like you have to scour the pitch. So vahai de katani zefasa urcha de milsa katani. Why does the Mishnah tell you it's a case where you put pitch on? Because that's what they normally did. So it's just describing a typical case of a gas by a stone gas. It doesn't really matter whether you put pitch in there or not. Either way, if you put wine in there, either darachba or because the pitch has wine in it, you have to scour it in order to use it for a Jew to make kosher wine in it. So kamash malan, that's not actually the case. That really it's only because the zephes, and the zephes has wine in it, but if you have a uncoated gas of stone, you don't have to worry about the wine that was stomped in it. Okay, so...
No St. Tom is no issue here with the zephes, the... You know that the Zephyrs
mixed. Apparently not. I mean, let's put it this way: on some, of course, it's not. How do you know that it's not? Because if it ruined the wine, they would find something else to coat the bar with, to coat the gas with. Okay. What's that? They did. Okay. Next, Ika da Amri. There's another version. Amar Rava, Davka Zefasa, Avol Darachba Lo Sagi LeBenigod. The second version of Rava says, and both of them have in common, that they're claiming that the Mishnah's din is specifically by Zefasa, when you coated it with pitch. On the first Lashon HaRava, I'll call it a leniency, saying that if you didn't put any pitch on it at all, and you darachba, you used it to make wine, you stomped on the grapes there, so then, since it was uncoated, it's not a problem. The second Lashon says that if you stamped on the grapes after, in other words, the only time it's sufficient by scouring the Zephas is when all you did was put the Zephas in and it had a little wine mixed in. But if you actually stamp on the grapes after you put the pitch in, so then it's not sufficient to scour the pitch, but you actually have to do, presumably, you have to at that point be kolef. You'd have to peel it away. So, so Ika Da'amri again, Amar Rava Dafka Zephasa, Aval Darach Ba, after you put the pitch in, lo sagi labing niguf. So the Gemara says again, pshita zefasa tanan. It says, the Mishnah tells you zefasa. It doesn't say darachba. So ma'u detema hu adenafilu darachba. You might have thought that the halacha is the same. It doesn't matter whether you just mixed a little wine in when you put the pitch in, or if you also went ahead and you stomped on the grapes in there. It's all the same. You would have thought, v'hayde katani zefasa orcha demilsa katani. That's the normal stage, the first thing you do. Kamash malan, dafka zefasa. Aval darachba lo sagi le beniguf. You would have thought that the halacha is always the same. Once you have some wine in the pitch, you have to scour it. Why does the Mishnah tell you? I'll elaborate a little in the Gemara. Why does the Mishnah tell you the example of zefasa? Because because you might have thought that zefasa alone is not sufficient to be a problem. The Mishnah is telling you as soon as you put the zephas in with a little wine, it's already a problem. You need to scour it in order to kasher it. But even if you did darachba, it doesn't make it worse. So kamash malan, Rav is telling you that no, that really the Mishnah is being dafka. It's being very precise and very limited, and only when what you did was you coated it with pitch, that's when nigov is sufficient. So it works out that according to Rava's two lashonos, the first and the ikadamri, there's no debate between the two of them, as the way Rashi and Tosas explain. The first, we basically have three rules when it comes to a stone goss with pitch in it. Rule number one, is that if you don't put pitch in it and you are dorech in it, you press the grapes, you just wash it out. Step number two, if you covered it with pitch, but you didn't stomp in it, then you need to scour it in order to kasher it. And rule number three is that if you put zephas in it, you put pitch on it, and you dorech in it, and you stomp on the grapes, then you have to peel away the zephas.
Okay. What does scour mean?
Scrub with this abrasive agent, right? The Afer and the Mayim.
So Darach was talking about the Ovei Kochavim is making the wine.
Correct.
So why are you interpreting the zefasa aval darachba to mean only if it's pitched and not if it's done in a naked gas, as opposed to the isser applying to whether the wine was mixed in initially or if the Ovei Kochavim is dorech a new set of grapes onto a pitched gas, which would be more of a problem. In other words, if there's just a little bit of wine that was put into the pitch initially,
right,
then that's one question. If you need to scour it or not, fine. That, and you need to scour it, and everybody agrees, and then it's okay, right?
Right.
But then what if the Ovei Kochavim is actually makes a new
that's what Darachba means. In other words, I think the second
lush, it's pitched or not, I think it is still pitched. The issue is that now there's extra.
The way Rashi understands the second lashon of Rava is exactly that. In other words, when the guy just put pitch on it and mixed his wine in there, that's a small amount of wine, and it's sufficient to scour the pitch. If the guy goes ahead and now he's dorech in it,
right,
so then there's much more absorbed, and that's insufficient to be kolei.
With pitch, correct.
The first lashon of Rava is darach without pitch. The second lashon rava is darach after the pitch.
You don't care about shear and darach,
why? I think, the answer is that the chachamim are not going to be cholik. In other words, once the guy goes ahead, did he stomp on 5 grapes, 10 grapes, 15 grapes? Look, normally probably he fills it with grapes and he stomps on it. But the chachamim are not going to sort of go down and say, okay, exactly how much was he dorech? So once he's dorech, that already brings us to another level.
Rava, why do you say it's without pitch?
What?
Where does it say here there's no pitch?
Where does it
say? Darachba. So the first gear says, Dafka zifasava darachba lo, meaning the first.
The answer is, the two lashonos of Rava are almost the same thing. So firstly, your question is not on me, it's on Rashi. Right. So why does Rashi, the answer is that when the Gemara in the second Lashon says, Aval Darachba lo sagi le benigov, it makes it clear that in the first Lashon, lo means you don't even need nigov. In other words, the Mishnah said,
you don't need it, but why does that mean it doesn't have pitch? Maybe well, what? You
but how can that? How can that be? You're telling me that if he just put the pitch in,
because if you bake it with pitch, right? If you put the wine in the pitch and then you let it dry, then it's maybe more difficult to extract it.
Right.
So then, even if you scour it, it's still usser because you can't get the wine taste out of the pitch. Whereas if you let it, whereas if you're darafa, if that's the only issue, right? In other words, if you make the pitch without wine...
Oh, no, no. So the assumption...
Then you step on the grapes and then you have wine, then it's easier to clean. So the, low, meaning you don't even need to do this.
So the assumption... That's nobody, I think... Most of the Rishonim don't have this gear, so, and I don't know if anybody reads it that way. I think the reason Rashi doesn't is because the starting assumption is the first Rashi in the Mishnah. In other words, the assumption is when the way you coat a gas with pitch, you always use wine in it. That is the assumption.
You have to use wine.
And therefore, once the Gemara says lo in the first lashon, in contrast to the second one where lo sagi le benigov, so lo means you don't even need igov. And now the question is, why not? If you needed it already once he put the pitch in, because he mixed the wine in, why does it get better because you're darachba? So the answer is no. Rashi says darachba means you didn't put any pitch in, and you don't need nigov because there's no pitch to absorb the wine, and the stone doesn't absorb, you just wash the stone off. Okay.
Obviously, they're treating stone as a single item here, and assuming that it has uniform absorption factors, so I have two quick questions, and then I'll relate this. One is, the layer of farming begins to differentiate between soap stone and sandstone, which are tremendously absorptive, and granite, which is not. Two...
Was that a question? You were asking that question?
That's good.
Make a decision.
Uh-huh.
Question number two is, also in terms of sort of how things track out from the time of the Mishnah, are there now categories of things that have the status of ash that you know what is considered sufficiently caustic or abrasive to kosher things? Like what has a dean of ash in the is it Brillo? Is it steel wool? Is it acid wash? Is it, whatever?
So regarding the first question, I think that one of the points that has to be made is that... I think that you may find some distinctions, but most of the time, I think what happens when you talk about stone materials, I think that there are probably a lot of posts can will say that granite needs to be koshered. And at that point, it doesn't really make a difference what the stone is. In other words, wood is absorbent, but it can be koshered. Right? Cheres is its own halacha. The Gemara says that HaTorah, there are two ways of understanding what makes cheres unique. The more famous thing is HaTorah Heida al Klei Cheres Sheina Yotzi Midei Dofi Ola Olam. It's almost like the Torah is telling us Cheres will never emit everything that it has in it, which seems to be very strange that the Torah should be coming to tell us some type of a din. There is a Shita in Rishon in the Baal HaIto who says that's only Midrabanan. Midaraisa, you could kasher Klei Cheres the same way. It's very absorbent, but because it's Xera because by Kutchin there's Xera Sakasav that you break the Klei Cheres. So there is such a view that says even cheres is not unique. But once you get outside the realm of cheres, there are some things that are absorbent, you can kasher them. So I think we do assume, we paskin clay even arbolea. They do absorb, obviously more with heat than they will with wine sitting in them. And therefore we require kasher when it comes to stone. So there may be more absorbent and less absorbent materials, but either way you can kosher them, and either way you need to kosher them. Here, the reason why Evan, again, there may be different kinds of Evan, is going to be a little different, is precisely because it was only cold. And particularly in this case, you're not talking about something which has wine left in it for extended periods of time. The Gemara is going to distinguish in a few lines between a klisha machniso lekium versus a klisha eno machniso lekium. We saw this a couple of years back in the second parak. There's a difference between a kli in which you leave wine for an extended period of time and a kli in which the wine spends a very short time and then gets emptied out. And we're obviously more machmir for obvious reasons when the wine stays in the kli for an extended period of time. With regards to the second question with scouring agents, I have not explored any of the literature on this because we rarely encounter this. If you were asking, I have a sort of parallel area, but it's kind of unique and different. For those who might be doing Daf Yomi, passed by it a little bit. When it comes to Hilchos Nida, and we talk about ksamim, stains, where you don't actually find the bleeding with a bedika, but you just find the stain on something, on a garment, So the Mishnah has a method for distinguishing, but how do you know it's not just a dye or something like that? So the answer is you wash it so that and see if it comes out. If it doesn't come out after you wash it, then you know it's dye and it's not blood, and you don't have to, you know, assuming ordinarily you would have to treat it as a kesem, and what are the ramifications are for Hilchos Nida, you can ignore it. But the question is, how, you don't just stick it in water. So the Mishnah says you have to put use seven cleaning agents in the right order. And today, we don't know all what all those are, so we don't do it anymore. We end up being machmir. That's its own interesting discussion as to why ksamim is only midrabanan, why isn't it a safek, but whatever it is. So we assume there that we actually don't know what they are. But that seems to be somewhat highly unique. There seems to be a very clear, definite, established chemical protocol. Now, if you ask me, we probably have better agents that we could use to do it, but we don't bother with it anymore. We have usually, most of the time, easier ways of avoiding the problems. I've never seen anything in this because it's not practical. I would imagine that if you were to go digging in shuvos of kashrus organizations when they deal with, you know, kashering stuff in industrial settings, they have cleansing agents that they say are the equivalent of Afer and Mayim. Right? This is not, Afer and Mayim is not so complicated that you couldn't say, listen, you know, I suspect that our dishwashing, the regular dishwashing, the detergent tabs are far more caustic than any Afer and Mayim that they were using. That's about what I would imagine. So,
is there a hierarchy of extremely absorbent to totally non-absorbent that some of the achronim may have developed?
No, nobody wants. In Kalim, the answer is yes, because Sfaradim hold that glass does not absorb. Ashkenazim certainly don't accept that fully. And then there's a recognition that that many posts can have, but nobody is willing to go out on the limb to say, like, stainless steel. They've apparently, Mechon Lev, they did experiments, and stainless steel absorbs less than glass does. So, so you will find chuvos. I've mentioned this before. The OU has some chuvos. I've seen one chuvos, a student of mine who worked there for a time showed me, in which they relied upon the fact that our kalim, our stainless steel kalim, do not absorb, as one of like five different things to be lenient in a situation of oil, some type of transportation of oil. Nobody's going to go, I know of nobody outright who will say, that your fleshik stainless steel pot, you now just cooked, within 24 hours, you cook milchiks, and it's okay. Right. Is it really okay? It probably really is okay, but I'm not posking that way, and I don't know anybody who's going to go out on that limb. But so the answer is, we all know it, but somebody's, you know, it takes that one person, one major postic who's going to take the plunge, and people are going to follow. But so, do I like it? The answer is, no, I don't like it, but okay. you have to choose your bridge to die on, so... Okay, this, by the way, also happens to be an area, this is more complicated than, there are many areas in which you can go out on a limb and choose a kula. This is not an area that you can do that, because you don't want to do things that make it impossible for people in the community to trust each other's kashrus, to eat each other's food, right? Now, that's why it's such a difficult area. I say kashrus, mamzerus, and hilchos beis hakneses are the three things that to be one community, you have to be able to somehow do together. Marry each other's children, eat each other's food, and daven in the same shul. Yeah, right. Otherwise you become two communities. Okay, so now, so the Gemara says the following, tells the following story. The story is, so the Gemara said, Kamashmalan, that dafka in the second lashon of Rava, is the fasa. Aval dorachba, after putting pitch in, losagi le benigov. And now they tell a story. Ki ahuda asa lekame de Rabbi Chia. Some non-Jew came to Rabbi Chia, and he wanted to basically have a kosher run of his wine. So he said, havli gavra de dochi li matzartai. So give me a guy, take one of the yeshiva bachrim, and have him help me that I can, you know, pure. I can make my gas pure, so that I can have whoever else. I can have the Jews run a kosher run of the wine, right? City winery. I don't know if they're still doing it. They want to have a kosher run, but somebody's got a kosher. The Kalim first. So send me one of the base medrash guys to take care of that. So Amar Leila Rav. Rav Chia turns to his nephew Rav and says, Zil Bahade, go with them and take care of it. V'chazi delo mitzavchas alai be midrasha. Make sure I don't get tsaris. I mean, make sure you do it right, because otherwise he's going to be screaming at me in the base medrash, like, you sent me a guy, and it turns out that nobody accepts the wine, they think it's not kosher. So make sure, Rechia says to Rav, do a good job. I don't want to hear his complaints in the base medrash. Okay. So, Azal Chazei, the Havashia Tvei. Rav looked at the at the vat, that a guy apparently had been put zavas in, and he saw that it was very smooth. And if it's very smooth, the assumption is you're not going to have wine in the cracks. So he said, Amar, hai vadei benigov sagile. Yeah, for sure. The scouring should be fine. It's a smooth surface. But bahadei de ka'azel va'asi, as he was, I guess, scouring, going back and forth, chaza pi libitose, v'chaza dahava male b'chamre. He uncovered cracks and he saw there was wine there. Amar, halo sagile benigov ela b'kilof. Apparently, I need to strip off all of the zephas because there are you know, pockets of wine in there. That's what my uncle said to me. He's telling me, be careful. So that is the concern, that once the guy, this had been presumably a goss that had a lot of wine done, and probably not just the pitching process, and therefore there wound up being a lot of, there were pockets of wine, it was uneven, and that's why you had to strip away. So when you have darachba, it's insufficient to just scour the goss, you actually have to strip away all the pitch and start again. Okay, fine. Now the Gemara continues. Tanu Rabbanan, Hagas v'hamachatz v'hamashpech shel ovdei kochavim. What I want to do first is I just want to read the Braisa because you won't be clear what exactly the details of the Braisa are dealing with until you read the entire thing. In other words, there are two things we want to know in dealing with these vessels. We want to know, number one, what the vessels are made of, and number two, whether or not they were pitched, whether or not they were coated in pitch. So the Braisa starts. Hagas, which is the big tub in which you stomp on the grapes. V'hamachatz, Rashi says a machatz is the thing that you scoop out the wine from the bar, the ladle. Fine, a ladle. I hope there's something bigger than a ladle, but yeah, to get the wine out of the bar into the barrels. You know, you want to put the wine in barrels. So far, these are two things. And the last one, agas v'machatz v'hamashpech, the mashpech is a funnel. So these are three things in which the wine doesn't sit for extended periods of time, but the wine does spend time in there, right? But they're really, it goes in the gas just so it can go down into the bore. The machatz is the super big ladle that you put it out with. So it spends a little time in there, but not a lot of time. And the mashpech is the funnel through which you pour wine in some cases, from one kli to another kli. So those things that belong to a goy, Rebbe matir benigov, Rebbe permits kashering them through the scouring. V'chachamim osrim, they say it's insufficient. Now, what material was their pitch? We don't know yet. Now, umode Rebbe is mode b'kankanim shel ovdei kochavim. He admits that he agrees with the Chachamim that scouring is insufficient when it comes to the kankanim, which would be the wine barrels, the wine bottles of the goy, shehein asurim, that they are asur, and that nigov at least is not enough. Uma hefresh bein zeh lazeh, what's the difference between a ladle and a funnel versus the wine bottles, the wine jugs, the wine barrels? In one of them, the wine sits and is, I would say, it has what we would call kavush. The halacha in that is relevant to us is that if you have a liquid, if you have milk that's stored in a container for more than 24 hours, a container made of material that absorbs, we assume that it absorbs from the milk. This is the principle that's known as kavush kimavushal. Kavush in its original form, that all Rishonim agree to, means when it's pickling, you have like a salt or you have vinegar or something very sharp. Now, that causes absorption. It certainly does with food, probably with kalim. And then the question is, how long does it have to be and what type of liquids constitute pickling kavush? We end up being machmir for at least all liquids if it's 24 hours. Liquids that are very strong, like salt water, like brine, like vinegar, you don't even need that long, right? But when you prepare the maror, prepare the lettuce before Pesach, and you might want to soak it in vinegar to kill the bugs, so they warn you that you really can't have it there very long, because if you leave it there, you know, even a certain number of minutes in vinegar, it's like the lettuce is now treated halachically as mavushal. And maror, which is mavushal, you can't be yotze with. Why? Because kavush. Because when it's pickled, it's treated kemavushal. So in this case, when you have the yayin that you machniso lekiyum, you leave it in these containers for some period of time, the assumption is they're going to absorb. Now, we still don't know yet explicitly what material we're talking about, although the obvious candidate, once you're talking about things in which wine was stored, was typically earthenware, was typically cheres. But now it becomes clear. Yes. at least in the time of the Gemara. I don't know. Again, it's hard to know, Marshall, because what has survived from the Roman period, obviously all these amphora, which are pottery, which are cheres, but the only thing is if it were wood, it probably would have rotted away. So it's hard to know. But my assumption in rabbinic literature generally, it sounds to me it's mostly clay cheres. The truth is just the technology for making wooden barrels is much more complicated, I think, than making earthenware. So anyway, so the next line makes clear, though, that it's talking about, up until this point, it's talking about earthenware. Why? V'shel eitz, v'shel even, but if these vessels, these multiple vessels that were listed were wood or were stone, which means until now they were of cheres. So then yinagev, you need to scour it. V'im hayu mezufafim, and if these containers, presumably, I assume of eitz and even, were covered with pitch, asurim, meaning at least minimally speaking, you'd have to scrape away all the pitch. That's what the Braisa says. So immediately, you realize there's a problem because there's a contradiction between this Braisa and what the Mishnah says. So the Gemara immediately is going to jump up and say, one second. V'hotanan, gatz shel even, shezefasa ove kochavim minagva v'hi tahora. So the Mishnah says that if you have a stone gas, so this is, so when I were going on the on the first part of the Mishnah. And in the Mishnah, when you had a gash shel even, shezefasa, ovei kochavim, everybody agreed that nigo was sufficient. And yet here, where you have a gash shel zefes, a gash shezefasa, ovei kochavim, the chachamim say it's insufficient with nigo. Presumably you need to peel away all the stuff. Why? So the Gemara says, masrisan delo darachba, braisa de darachba. Ah, the Mishnah that says that when you have a gash, when you have a gas of Evan that you cover with pitch, all you need to do is scour it. That, as Rava said in the second Lashon, it's only if you didn't, the goy subsequently didn't thresh, didn't stomp on the grapes and didn't make wine in there. And the Braisa, where the Chachamim say that no, that Niguv is not enough, that's because Darachba, and that's why the Chachamim require you to be Kolef. That everybody requires you to be Kolef. Okay. Fine. V'ha'anantanan. But the Gemara says, but we have shelcheres. I'm sorry, did I skip something here? Yeah. Amar mar. Hagas v'hamachatz v'hamashpech she'ovid kochavim, which now we realize is talking about earthenware. Rebbe matir benigo v'chachamim osrim. So v'ha'anantanan, the Gemara says, shelcheres afal pi shekalaf hasazefes arezo asura. The Mishnah says, and at least at first glance, it looks like everybody agrees to this, in the last line, that if you covered the bar, you covered the gas in pitch, and it was a cheres, it was made out of cheres, the gas. Everybody agrees that even if you peel away the zephes, you still can't use the gas of cheres, because not only did it get through the pitch, but it was absorbed into the cheres. And yet, and that seems to be divrei hakol, chacham and Rebbe. And here Rebbe says that when you have a gas, which is cheres, and it's not covered in pitch, right? In other words, the first part of the Braisa is the opening line of the Braisa of Hamachatz, Vahagas, Vahamashpech, Shalovikochavim. When Rebbe is Matir Benigov, he's Matir Benigov when it's Cheres and when it's not yet pitched, because the next line is the Imzefasa. So yet in the Mishnah, Rebbe says that even when you put pitch in there and you scrape away the pitch, Rebbe and the Chachamim say that the whole thing is that it's Aser. So how do you deal with that? So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Sefer de Masnisan, Asa'an L'Rabbanan. No, you misread it. It's not true. When the Mishnah said at the end, V'shel Cheres, Afal Pisha Kalaf HaSasef HaShir Asura, that's a continuation of V'chachamim Omrim, Yiklof, and so on. It's all the V'chachamim. Rebbe would say that Cheres also would be, Cheres would be sufficient, whether you did pitch it or didn't pitch it. Either way, you would have to probably remove the pitch, and then if you did nigov on the cheres, that would be sufficient to kasher. Okay, so, yes?
So, the issue on kiyum, is it really just, kiyum obviously means something, right? And so, is it only a question of the passage of time, or is it the fact that it's not an inert substance, but in fact, chemical processes, you know, kiyum is actually finishing, like tannic processes are going on, acid is happening, fermentation is happening. Is there any further distinction about the type of material that's going in and whether actually, even if something like water could sit there for 1,000 years, it wouldn't have keeled because it's not actually changing.
So I don't. The answer you're thinking the I'll call the equivalent almost of seasoning a cast iron pot.
Well, I'm thinking it's equivalent of brine, which you just finished talking about, but that's actually deemed to be mevushal, so deemed to be vishal.
Right.
This is a lighter form of that.
Correct.
And I'm asking if that's why keeling has a halachic status, because it's a lighter form of pickling, brining,
so the way we paskin, I don't think so. In other words, I'm not sure I understand the question. The way we, when it comes to a kli, at least, right? In other words, if you put something and soak it in, kiyum just means machnisa lekiyum, means you keep it in there. You keep it in there a period of time. You mekayim it there. It's not about transforming the kli or transforming the liquid. Machnisa lekiyum is you put it in storage, as opposed to it just. Yeah, I don't think it's about having an impact on either substance. The way, let's say, you season a cast iron pot or in other words, water, if you soak something, a food in water, and we can, I mean, the water is presumably kosher, unless it's, you know, meinesach, so presumably water does this something similar to the food, that brining will, but it's not going to be the same flavor, but it will soften the food, it will do all sorts of things to it, but I don't think that's what's here, it's just the longer it sits there, the more likely it's absorbed. One, by the way, very frustrating thing, it's puzzling thing about this principle of kavushka mevushal in pots. You know, when liquid sits in a pot, is when does it get absorbed into the pot? The answer is it's quantum. It's a 24 hours. If you leave it there for 23 hours and 59 minutes and you pour it out and you dry it out, there's nothing absorbed in the pot. If you leave it there for 24 minutes and 0 seconds, now we say that kavushka mevushal, you have to kasher the pot. You know.
The concept of keem is only brought up with kankanin, right?
Correct.
So what about a kankan shel evin?
So I assume that the Evan doesn't, in cold, just doesn't absorb enough, that it was a concern.
But Kankanim, Rebbe says, is
Yasser. Cheres.
What?
He's Moda by Cheres.
He's Moda by Cheres. It just says Moda Rebbe, but Kankanim.
Right, no, but that...
that's referring just to Cheres.
Yes, because the whole first part of the Bryce is Cheres. The next line is, and Shel Evan v'Shel Eitz, V'Shel Eitz v'Shel Evan. So the Bryce up until that point was only talking about Cheres.
Well, but it was talking about initially machatz, mishpach, and gas.
Correct.
So maybe kankan is a separate. In other words, because there's a separate issue of kiyum there. So does kiyum is that a create a more chumra? Is that a more machmir situation because of the time dependent variable? Right?
So there's no I don't know what the din would be. I know that in the short term we don't treat them the same way. Rebbe requires nigov, whereas Evan, at least according to Rava, only requires you rinse it out. Could they be the same in the long term? Maybe, but there's no evidence from the Brisa. As I think the Brisa in its own right, you have to, unless you argue that Moda Rebbe is a later layer to the Brisa, I think you have to assume it's only talking about Cheres. And at best you could say is you don't know what the din would be when it comes to Eitz and Evan, because it's just not addressed, right? You know that Cheres, Rebbe agrees that if it's Machlis and Lakiyum, he agrees with the Chachamim that Nigov is no longer sufficient, and you have to, whatever the form of kashering is. Maybe he would say that Evan, jumps two leaps, that Evan, when it's a short term, you just wash it out. But Evan, when it's long term, maybe it's like Cheres, it's possible, but the Brisa doesn't imply that. It's not explicitly against it either. Okay.
Minutes to 24 hours, because it still goes on today with medications.
Okay.
Where you have certain criteria for medication to be dose adjusted by 50% in some cases, and it's when something changes by, let's say from 1.5 and above, you would give dose X, and 1.5 and below, you'd give 2X. 1.49, you give 2X.
Right, so I guess my question, but is that...
So it's still going on.
Is that really because that's the most logical thing to do on a pure molecular chemical level, or it's just because it's safe, in a gray zone and in practice, Lemaisa?
I was involved in litigation related to this, so it's complicated, so I agree it doesn't make any sense, but it's still going on.
Right, so sometimes we have a protocol just because...
check a blood level, and we're not doing this.
So. What I would say is the following, is that if you're, from a logical perspective, either it means that before 24 hours, it's likely to absorb nothing. And the truth is, 24 hours and 5 minutes, it's also likely to absorb nothing, and probably 25 hours. But we have to set a line somewhere, and so what we're really saying is up until that point, it's not likely to absorb. But once you go past that point...
Going on, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Much bigger implication.
I got it. I understand. Okay. Now, comes along Rava. Darash Rava. Na'ava artachu. Two words. Na'ava is an Aramaic word which refers to a gas, a press. It's found in the Targum in Parshas Vayechi, in the description of the wine, the plenty of wine in Yosef, I think it's Yosef's, Yehuda's land, in Chachlili Einayim Yayin Ulven Shinayim Echalav. So the Targum talks about Yitufun Na'avohi Mechamor. His vat should drip of wine. So Na'ava, what do you do with a vat? Rava says Artachu. So Rashi says you boil hot water and you pour it in. Presumably the vat is usually too big to fit into another kli to do kashering, so you can't exactly boil a big pot of water and then put the vat in. Instead, you just pour boiling water into it. So this may be the most, practically speaking, important line in this entire sugya. You kasher a pot. So the way you kasher things, normally what do you do when you kasher things? So you boil a pot of water, you take your other things, and you toss them in, and after they're clean, and magically you've kashered, it's fine. Okay. So the question is, what do you do, though, when you have a pot that is too big? Right? You know, if it's turtles all the way down, at some point, there's the pot that can't fit into any other pots. What do you do with that pot? Short of blowtorching it, right? Which, whenever you need Haggalah, if it's safe, you can theoretically do Libun. You can use fire, but it's long kamin, and maybe your pot doesn't really like, you know, the fire. So, a fire of that kind. So, what do you do? So, the Gemara, at the end of our Masechta, is going to come up with an ingenious solution. Some of you kashrut might have done something like this. If it's not for Pesach purposes, you can take dough. If it is for Pesach purposes, you need to take clay. You build a little thing, you attach it to the rim of the pot just below the outside. There are two ways of doing it. But then what you do is you can fill over, the concern is the following. You can kosher the inside of the pot completely with boiling water inside it. That should be sufficient, but the problem is you can't get it all the way to the top. And even if you can get it to the top, you can't get it to the top of the rim, which sometimes fruit splatters on. So therefore, what you do is you create this artificial rim around it, so the pot is now a little bit taller, and the water can rise up a little further, and you can kosher it that way. That's one way. The other way, now, so by Pesach, you can't do that using dough, because you're koshering the pot for chametz, and your dough is chametz, so you use clay. Now, the way we most of the time do this is... The other way of doing it is you take your pot, you fill it with water boiling to the top, then you take another very hot thing, they often tell you use a stone. I think you can also do it if you boil another smaller pot of water to just dump the water, and it's still going to not lose its bubbling. And what it does is then it splatters over. And the Gemara says that just like it's bolea benitzotzos, just like it absorbs, you don't cook on the top of the rim of the pot because the stuff flows out, but it splatters there, you can kosher it with benitzotzos as well. So the question really could be asked is the following. Why not, this is not my idea, I'm stealing from the Ran here, why don't you simply, you know, take boiling water and pour it over the pot? Pour it into the pot, pour it over the rim of the pot. Why do you have to have the water coming when it's in a kli rishon on the fire boiling over? Why is that necessary? And the fact that that's necessary would suggest that you can't actually pour out water. You know, I described to you how we do it, but I have a simpler solution. Why, if you're worried about the rim of the pot, and any part of the pot for that matter, but especially the rim that you can't throw, just pour boiling water, right? If that's what Rava said, to kasher the gas, is nava, the gas, artahu, boil water and pour it in, and then why is that not sufficient there? And it would suggest the fact that it's not sufficient. The central question that this raises here is the machlokas harishonim that's known as irui kekli rishon, or is it not kekli rishon? In other words, how do you deal with the status? We normally know that if you have a pot on the fire, and even if you take it off the fire, when it is yad so levis, it still would burn you if you put your hand in it. So that's called the kli rishon. And there are two kinds of kli rishon, so that's called the kli rishon. And then we know there's something called a kli sheni, where you pour it out of that pot into something else. And we know that the Gemara generally has a rule that kli rishon is mevashel, and kli sheni is not mevashel. We have this by Hilchos Shabbos. As a general rule, there are maybe exceptions, but kli sheni is not mevashel. Right? But a kli rishon is mevashel. So So the question that the Rishonim deal with is, what if it's neither a Kli Rishon nor a Kli Sheni? What if it's Ivri Mikli Rishon? What if it's you pour out of a Kli Rishon onto something? Is that Ivri treated as if it were a Kli Rishon? Or is it really treated as if it's a Kli Sheni? Now, on Shabbos, the question would be the following. If a Kli Sheni is not Mavashel, if Ivri, assuming, we assume, let's say most things, Kli Sheni is not Mavashel. If you do Ivri, if that's treated like a Kli Sheni, it's not a problem to pour boiling water onto something from the pot which was originally on the fire. If, however, Ivri is a Kli Rishon, then when you pour it on there, it's considered being Mavashel, and that's Asar on Shabbos. Now, how does that... I'm going to assume for the moment, even though this is not... Even though I don't hold this is true, I don't know what the Rabbi Lukstein's psak is here. I know the Rav allowed making of tea in a Kli Sheni, said, in my house, we don't do that. We don't make tea in anything. But I'm going to use that example. Okay. Assuming that tea leaves are not a problem, a Kli Sheni. Making that assumption, again, is that your father-in-law's, is that the psak here?
We had this discussion in our house with you.
Oh, okay, I don't remember.
Just with you.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. I know the Rav Paskin, like Reb Chaim, there's no such thing as Bishop with Kli Sheni. Fine. So, okay. And Rav Shechter follows that. That's the way he paskins as well. There's a very famous story. His oldest daughter was a Michalah, and they taught them that nobody holds you can make tea in a Kli Sheni. And Aviv Rav Shechter raises their hand and says, in my house they do. So sure, she must be mistaken. So Rav Shechter, he said, yeah. So we did that. I was following the Rav, following Rav Chaim. Okay, but so let's, working with that assumption, you have tea leaves here. And you could imagine you put a tea bag in a cup, and you put it under the urn, and you just pour the hot water directly onto the tea bag. That's Irimi Kli Rishon. If you believe that Irimi Kli Rishon is like a Kli Sheni, and that a Kli Sheni is not Mavashel by tea, so that would be Mutar on Shabbos. If you held that Irui is a Kli Rishon, then there is Bishol in a Kli Rishon, and that's being Mavashel on Shabbos.
But you couldn't put the tea bags into the urn.
For sure not. Everybody would agree on that.
But even pouring it out.
Right, you can't even pour the water out of the urn onto the tea bag. If
how are you going to get it from the urn into the...
You wait to put the tea bag in. You first put the hot water from the urn into the teacup. Now that tea is a Kli Sheni. So if you hold that it's okay to cook tea, to put tea in a Kli Sheni, everybody would agree, you can make cold brewed tea. If you soak a bag in water and it flavors it, that's not Bishul. If there's no heat, there's no Bishul. So the question is a Kli Sheni, which speeds the process up with heat, but it's not a Kli Rishon, is there Bishul there? So if you hold there's no Bishul on tea in a Kli Sheni, so you put the hot water in the Kli first, then you put the tea bag in. If you held that Irui was Kli Sheni, that the pouring is already, since it's not in the initial Kli Rishon anymore when it comes in contact, that you hold that that's a Kli Sheni, that would be Mutar also. So I don't think, we certainly nobody paskins that way. We do not assume that you can do Irui Kli Rishon. We'll talk about what the issue is in a moment. But that's the question. What is the status of Irui Mi Kli Rishon? Is Irui... What's that? No. I think...
So you're like way further Rav Shechter and Rav Chaim?
Well, even those who... Even if I made it a Kli Shlisha, I would be way from her. Yeah, I think... Can you make it a Kli Sheni? Now, the answer is, I think, Tiyas Kale Habishol. I think the only reason... Once you say Kli Sheni... The only reason why Kli Sheni... This Tosa says in the third parak in Shabbos, why is it Kli Sheni different than Kli Rishon? He says, because Kli Rishon has the Fanos HaMachamimos. The walls continue to preserve the heat and add heat or something like that. And a Kli Sheni doesn't have hot walls to the Kli. Once you say a Kli Sheni is a Mashal Ti, I don't care how many times you pour it into another Kli, it's still going to it should be the same din. If the heat of the water is enough to cook it, it's the same heat in the Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi, Kli Revi. What's that?
But it's only oatmeal.
Is oatmeal pre-cooked?
Yeah.
What, I'm sorry? Because the oatmeal is pre-cooked. That's okay. You probably could make it a Kli Rishon too. I'm not telling you to do that.
But if it's cold, you'd have no problem with it. Making it cold.
There's no heat. I see. We're voting to learn Shabbos, not brachos of Eitzah. Okay. Yes.
There's a difference between instant oatmeal. I don't want anybody to leave here saying, yes.
Marshall said so.
The type that you have to boil for 20 minutes, the steel cut you can't make. The type that's instant and cooks in 1 minute, you can make with boiling water, according to
this very crazy from guy over here. You can make an appreciation.
Right. When you talk about making tea or coffee on Shabbos, if you're dealing with instant, it's never a problem because it's already been cooked and then dehydrated in bishalach or bishal. That's not a problem.
Black tea has been posted as opposed to green tea, which hasn't been.
So then there's still a question about bishalach or afia. Right. There's a question there. Right. It's the same with coffee. In my house, they do make coffee.
In your chicken soup, and you can have green tea because you have by a bishalach or afia.
I don't put challah in my chicken soup.
Oh.
Who is this guy?
But Rabbi, you're okay.
It's a chumra that the Ramah has that maybe there's bishul achar afia. The bread was baked, but it wasn't cooked. So the chumra that he quotes from the Urim that we know that there's no bishul achar bishul in almost every area of halacha where bishul is involved. If it's been cooked once, the second act of recooking it doesn't constitute cooking by basar b'halav, by bishul on Shabbos. Right? That's why you can reheat something that's been cooked. What?
Cook,
yes. I think they have a cooking process done there first. I think so. Yeah.
Couldn't you soak cold water and then add hot water to it?
That's gross.
All right, let's not go there. Bottom line is that something that's gross. I see. We're going to find out. What's that? The croutons, yes. Yes.
So why I assume
that it's cooked already. Yes.
But
you may have a double. I'll find out. I think, remember, a lot of things they'll do cooking first and then they'll bake it. So if it's not, I'll have to stop putting those in too. What?
Boil first.
What's that? If they boil them first, and then they bake them, that's called. It's like a bagel. A bagel you can put in the soup, because it's cooked first. It's boiled first. They boil the dough.
It's not even bread. You don't have to wash for bagels.
What's that?
Tamanim don't wash for bagels.
I don't know what the Mechaber Paskin's explicitly. I don't know. Nobody showed him argue. If you cook and then you, I'm not going to. I don't know what their sheet is. If you make hamotzi, it's clear. There's nobody who argues on it. So I don't know what the Tamani position is. I have no idea where that comes from. The Shulchan Aruch. There's no dissenting opinion that I'm aware of in the Rishonim. You boil something first, then you bake it. It's bread.
But sometimes you see bagels in a store and it says you have Amazonas.
Yeah, you should ignore that probably.
They
say a lot of things.
But you're rationalizing
you should understand something about the tea. The Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan both say that if you make tea in a klisheni, you're chayav achatas. It's not maiden. There's something called kale habishal.
Yeah, but what about klisheni and klisheni revi?
They don't distinguish between them necessarily. Right? In other words, the argument by the soup by a klisheni, by a fia, bishal harfia, were makel. There the prima gadim says it's okay. So you could, by the way, work out, Marshall, that if the ladle, see, this is doing your day. The question is, what's the status of the ladle? There's a very long pause at the end of Simon Sadi Beis in your day. It talks about the ladle you put in the soup. If you don't leave it in there, really make your adin, it should be a klisheni once you take it out, and then you put it into the bowl. So, but anyway.
Plastic doesn't absorb heat anyway, so it becomes a klisheni if you leave it. And the ladle comes out cool.
What's that? We use a metal ladle. So, anyway, for another discussion. Tough crowd this morning. Okay, Marshall, I think it's you. Right. Okay. So anyway, so the bottom.
No,
you should actually, now you know, I'll tell you. I will tell you. There was a time that someone, people might have made klisheni tea in my house, and I wasn't makpid because I knew that the Rav Shita, and at some point my wife said to me, no, said, you're the mardash in this house. If you say that you don't think so, I make klisheni, it's not done in this house, right? My father-in-law would normally make tea in a klisheni, he's a student of the Rav, and I wouldn't really object. She said, no, not in this house. If you're the Maradas, at least here, those are the rules in this house. You know, I'm more tolerant, so. What's that? The Rav Chaim's position seems to be that klisheni is not mabashel, period. So under any circumstances. It's a din.
Mutter.
It's always mutter. There's no bishul on a klisheni, period. The Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan and most Achronim assume that there is an exception kabbalah. It's based upon a reading of a Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos, that there is such a thing as kalei habishul, things that cook very rapidly, and those things can cook even in a kli sheni. If it cools off while the yatzo led this, then that's not a problem. Nobody's going to argue on that. But that's not the way people. That's not the whole point. Is you make your tea when the thing is very hot. Otherwise, it's getting closer to a cold brew. Okay, so. Yes, the answer is yes. Correct. That's the only way. If I were, I drink tea occasionally. You make the tea before Shabbos and you concentrate it. And then you take hot water and you just pour in a little flavoring. Because that was already.
No, that wasn't my question. Would you make tea essence on Shabbos in cooler water? And then put hot water.
Friday night,
you put it in the shade. The next day.
So the answer is, I think I have to think about this. I have to think about this further, but I think the answer is you can. We don't assume when you take water and water. And as if you mix in a cliche, if you have hot water in a cliche, you can put cold water in there. Nobody says that's the problem. Like by water, it's not adding water to that is not a problem. So if you're going to add flavored water, I can't.
It should work.
I mean, I have to think, because the question as you look at it, probably should be fine. Most places that I've been, when people have tea essence, they make the tea essence from before Shabbos. Yeah. I have to think, it should be, I have to think about it a little further, but yeah. Okay.
Tangentially, yes. A hot water dispenser, is that a clay shiny?
That's usher.
No, wait. There's different opinions. Why?
If it draws more water in, is the problem. Let's ask the question whether mutter usser, not on Shabbos, what is the hot water from the sink? It's the same question, right? It's connected to the, let's say you have a tank. I don't know what a tankless heater might be a little different. I don't know if it would be different. Let's say you have a hot water heating system with a tank. So I think we assume that the water that comes out of the tap is irimi kli rishon.
Right.
Okay? Once it lands in the sink, it's klisheni. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so the question we are left with then, which we're not going to find out until, God willing, there should be a shiur next week. I should be back. You can blame Gabe for that. But Abigail's not going to be there, I hear. But I plan to come back Monday Shabbos, so there should be regular shiur. So we will begin, God willing, the Tosos, Darash Rava Nava Artechu, who discusses the Machlokas Rishonim, is how to treat Iri Mikli Rishon. Is it Kli Rishon? Is it cliché, or is it neither? Okay.
Thank you.